short at least one House member. You're welcome here this afternoon. Apologize for being a 15-minute late start. But let's go ahead and continue on with the public hearing of House Bill 5025 relative to the Office of the Governor. And I think that Mr. Wyatt yesterday was just finishing with the organization chart of the Governor's Office. If you'd like to continue, Mr. Wyatt, it's a pleasure to have you with us this afternoon. Thank you very much. Incidentally, I'm holding the Governor's budget to sort of the folks who will know unequivocally, I'm holding the Governor's budget hostage until he agrees to go fishing with me. Fly fishing in Lake County. I've got the world's best fly fishing private lake staked out, and I told us that the Governor and I could come down and go fishing, and I couldn't come alone, but I could come with the Governor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Wolf, who I think you are familiar with, this matter squarely on the Governor's radar screen, and I can tell you that it doesn't take a great deal to talk to Governor and join fly fishing. It's the rest of his staff who are trying to manage his schedule, but I have a feeling I always lose on these.
I told him we could stop by and talk to two different schools on our way coming and going.
There you go.
And that way it would make it look like it was just addressing the issues of the concerned schools in that particular portion.
There you go. All right.
And they are of concern because one of them is a school that's having a great deal of difficulty because it's competing with some other schools. As a matter of fact, it's gone to a dormitory type school in that portion of Lake County. And then the next day is the graduation for the Lake County school system. So I thought if the Governor would like to stop by and say a few words and maybe show off a few trophy fish or something like that, then maybe we could make a deal. But short of that, Mr. White, again, it's our honor to have you here today, and if you'll continue on, please. Thank you.
Yesterday, I think I'd gone through kind of the functions of the office and the organizational chart. And it's a, as I think you've seen from the presentation, it's a relatively uncomplicated budget. It is almost entirely general funds. We have a couple of other fund items, the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Program and the Affirmative Action Program are both other funds. And of course, the telecommunications role, which is being proposed to be transferred back to DAS in this budget, is also other funds. Everything else is general funds. So we can run, but we can't hide from what's happening in the balance of the general fund. As you can see, make sure that I get this right, Governor's recommended budget would, in total, would decline. Correct. Yeah, it's just a barely a 0.26% decrease from 97.99, and that is largely the result of the transfer of the telecom function, which takes two positions and about $500,000 or so out. The rest of it is general fund. Most of our budget, candidly, is comprised of personnel, staff, people who staff the governor and the various programs that he manages directly. And then the services and supplies, which pay for our dues to the National Governors Association and to the Western Governors Association. And those are the only dues-related items in our budget. Special appropriation of $50,000, which has been remained the same for, boy, since I was here. That was a long time ago. And this largely pays for what I would characterize as the ceremonial aspects of the job. And so when Senator Lynn's good friend from Shawanonzo arrived at Mahonia, this will help treat them to a meal. That's essentially the purpose of that special appropriation. The only other packages I think was referenced yesterday are the reclass package, and the Y2K phone upgrades that we're going to require in order to avoid shutting down telephone operations on the 1st of July, or 1st of January, I guess it is, year 2000. Otherwise, we have included a reduction package of 4%, which comes entirely out of services and supplies because there's nowhere else to go in our budget. And now I'm speaking to you as the, I guess, the agency director more than as the government chief of staff, which is not an easy thing for us to do because of the nature of our budget, which is almost entirely general fund. I don't know how else to say this. Since I've been here, the governor's office budget has received, I would say, an unusual level of scrutiny from the fiscal underwriters here in the Capitol, and I no problem with that. It's a tight budget, and cutting $200,000 out of services and supplies is going to make my job of following the pencils and the paperclips even more challenging. And we'll end up this biennium with very, very little ending balance. I personally track this on a biweekly basis because I certainly don't want to end up on the wrong side of that, but it'll be tight. It'll be very tight.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Chair recognizes Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, heaven forbid it happened, but the governor's office had the ability to go to the e-board for emergency funds if something were to occur.
For general emergency funds?
For the office.
For the office. Any agency does. The governor approves all letters to the emergency board, so that's a possibility.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Not one I look forward to, but right.
Certainly so.
Follow-up, President Trump.
Thank you. One of the things that we've been working on in this process is to get the Department of Administrative Services to look at what they're charging other agencies for certain services.
Right.
Have you had any reductions from them in your budget or from other agencies along those lines, Attorney Generals? And I don't know, you probably don't have much in the way of Attorney General. We do, okay. Have those been factored into the budget already?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm tracking your question.
We had some commissions and things that were being charged that we thought were pretty outrageous fees for some of the services that other agencies provided for them, and they've done some recalculations and so forth.
Chairman of the committee, with respect to the assessments of government assessments, the employee relations board, I believe it is, employment relations board, has agreed to a fee reduction. That is going to be consolidated along with the reduction in assessments from the audit division and the expected reduction in assessments from the Department of Administrative Services. Those will be consolidated in a separate bill, appropriation adjustment bill. And if they will not go through the individual departmental budgets as such. So I guess in answer to your question, the budget before you is not prepared in anticipation of those. They were reduced potentially the prices that existed at the time of budget preparation.
So there, in a sense then, that will be some added, there'll be some reductions in the expenses they will have to pay out to other agencies, right? Assuming that bill works its way through. Is that, am I assuming correctly?
With respect to the Employment Relations Board, possibly the Department of Administrative Services, I think those are all reductions. The Audits Division, however, those, the change in assessments, there'll be some pluses and minuses, and so we don't know overall how many different ones. But with respect to the individual departmental budgets, for purposes of keeping separate the efficiencies, those are not considered, that's why they were being contained in a separate appropriation adjustment bill.
That takes me where I'm going.
One of the things that we did get commitment from as well, Representative Krupp, was a commitment from the Department of Administrative Services that relative to some fairly small budget, budgeted departments, that they would reduce the amount of administrative fee charged to those departments. If it was 22% on $100,000, and $100,000 was the total gross fund passing through, then that would take a pretty healthy hit out of some of those budgets. And so they came back with a proposal where they approximately paired in half a list of, and these were recommended, and the co-chairs are in possession of those tabs. And I think I know that the Legislative Fiscal Office has some of those concessions. But we haven't addressed the Department of Administrative Service budget to wrap it either. So until we can extract all of the efficiencies and determine the effect, because basically when they extract an efficiency out of a $100,000 budget, that their total cost is still the same, then it's going to be, unless we can find the efficiency in the Department of Administrative Service, then it's going to be passed on to some other agency. And so there's some tweaking yet to do. The governor's budget, as I recall, was not one that was small enough that they went ahead and modified it. The budget, I believe that Senator Lem was instrumental in asking that budgets under, was it $250,000? I've forgotten the amount, but under a small amount, not be charged the relatively high upcharge amount, so that those commissions and those.
I'm in working with that issue with the GAS,
mm-hmm.
and GAS agreed to charge just a half of the amount what there used to be, any budget less than $250,000.
$250,000.
Yes, that is the current proposal. I think we're going to look at that issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, that begs the next question, and I don't want to get off. We're dealing with the governor's budget here. Is DAS then going to end up, Department of Administrative Services, putting money in the bank? Are they then going to charge higher fees to other agencies to make up for what?
No. It's no increase at all to others. Only a small one today, just.
In order to accommodate those budgets, we will have to find the efficiency somewhere. I think that the total amount of reduction was several hundred thousand, or maybe it was just a couple of hundred thousand total efficiencies that had been discovered that they could do this with, that they could provide the service for. Excuse me. And so what it leaves us doing, Representative Krupp, is that before we pass on the Department of Administrative Service budget, we will have to come in and find the $118,000, I think is what it came up to, of efficiency within that budget. But the governor's budget is large enough that
it doesn't qualify,
does not qualify for the reduction in efficiency. So what Mr. Wiley is telling us today is that they've gone in to find the 4% efficiency and done so by looking at things like supplies and those kinds of things to try and people are going to start feeling very sorry for the governor when his pencil is about 2 inches long, and they say, "What's the matter? Can't you get a better pencil than that?" And other governors will start to give us pencils and so forth.
Yeah, let's borrow from the legislative budget.
That satisfies me. I'll set up the governor's office.
I think I was just about done. Just to summarize, we have three packages that are quite modest. One is bring the telecom functional back to UAS. One is our phone system, which will make it Y2K compatible. And the other is a group of reclassifications of individuals in the office whose duties and functions have been reviewed by the human resource folks at the past and have been recommended for reclassification in addition to the 4%.
Are there questions for Mr. White, Senator Ferrioli, would you please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm under the impression that there are some purely discretionary terms within the governance budget.
Correct.
Could you help me find those within the spreadsheet?
Special appropriation calls, $50,000. And I'm not sure.
I'm in the bigger
document. Mr. Chairman, we'll let the legislative fiscal address that, Congress.
Chairman, that $50,000 isn't specifically a line item identified in the governor's budget. It's spread throughout. It's identified separately in the Appropriations Act, but in the bill, but it is spread throughout the governor's budget or wherever, I guess, they need to use as supplies or operations or what. But it is the sum of the governor's request.
The statutory, as I recall, is not a special statutory appropriation. It's identified in the statute. There's a long history, and it's remained the same. I suspect, Senator, before you got here, I referenced this. It is intended primarily for what I would characterize as the ceremonial aspects of the office, so that when the delegation from Sholom Rondo arrives here in May, and they'll be treated to a ceremonial dinner and that sort of thing. And to my knowledge, it's been the same $50,000. I was a member here in 75, and it's been long before that. It's been the same figure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's probably only 10% of what the lieutenant governor will need to fill this forwarding to that, because first he will be busier on the trade meeting.
It's a customary, like other countries, it's the governor's the fund for treating the guests. And the dignitaries for all of us is a large amount. Our state is very, very poor on that point.
The choice of words of being poor, it perhaps is what you meant to say, Senator Lim was very frugal. And doing that.
Chairman, another question, if I might?
Please proceed, Senator Cirelli.
I guess I'd like to know if there's other agency budgets that contain discretionary funds that are available to the governor's office.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to figure out how to answer this question, Senator, because it's not a simple one. The specific answer, I think, is no, they're not available to us. I can't just dip in and take them. But the governor is the chief constitutional executive officer of the state. State agency directors work for him. Boards and commissions work for him. And if he indicates an interest in doing something, so long as it's obviously consistent with policy and law, governors tend to get what they want. But we don't have identified out there any pot that we look to or use. The 47,000 people who are employed by state government, less the judicial branch, less the legislative branch, are part of the executive branch of state government, and so they're all sort of on the same team. But we function almost entirely within our own resources in terms of dollars. Employees, we get, any day of the week, you're going to find a different crowd of people up in the governor's office working on this issue or that issue. But in terms of budgets, this is it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad to hear somebody in this process gets what they want. So that's a heartening observation. That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Trill is recognized.
Doesn't economic development have some sort of a discretionary fund for governor to help with investments or something?
Well, it's a strategic reserve fund, which has been retooled, but it's spent, I would characterize it this way. It is spent at the direction of the governor, but not
located there.
Yeah, I take it that Senator Ferrioli's question had more to do with things, and this is the way I would take it. If you feel otherwise, let me know. In support of the governor's office, and that's not a fact. The strategic reserve is intended for primarily for economic development activities, You know, you've got a plant coming in. This is a regional example, situation in Burns. They need a little help to build their sewer connection, for example. We might help that or a loan to do this, that sort of thing. It's fairly modest. In Governor Goldschmidt's day, this was a $12 to $15 million item, and now I think it's about $1 million biennial shot or something pretty close to that.
Sir, is Mahoney Hall funded in this budget?
It is not. Mahonia is part of the DAS budget. It's a state property like any others. It is under the jurisdiction of the Capital Planning Commission.
Okay.
With the strategic investment fund, the governor has used this money to bring some business into our state. And the governor used it real well to make sure you know, sometimes the city doesn't want to pay for, county doesn't pay for, state doesn't have enough money, then this fund they use effectively to bring the company into our state. You know, we'll give you this much money to help you out for many other issues. That has been pretty good.
Mr. Chair?
Any follow-up, Senator? Thank you very much.
Representative Kraft is ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In that regard, the strategic reserve, what kind of money is in that fund that economic
development? Representative Kraft, it used to be that there was a separate appropriation for the strategic reserve of an amount. And I think, if I recall correctly, for this current biennium, the actual appropriation was you know, I'm going to say maybe $1.5 million. I don't want to be held to the precise details here. About $1.5 million. It's a rolling fund. And by that I mean the Department of Economic Development manages it. And so they might make a commitment to Nucor, a very good example, because we have an outstanding commitment there. And this is the steel mill that's looking at locating down in Coos Bay, which could easily stand by name. And so these funds, I'm not sure what the budget guys would, how they would characterize this, but they roll over from one to the next.
One by any means?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So the appropriation was $1.5 million. Could easily have been $700,000 or $800,000 in play at the time of the development of the last budget. But what has occurred as a result of action taken in the last session is that the pool of resources used by the Department of Economic Development for strategic reserve, infrastructure funds, and so forth have been consolidated into one. So the strategic reserve fund as such no longer exists, and they have this larger pool from which they allocate resources for sewer and water construction projects, largely in rural areas, or things like the Nucor project, where we basically gave them $500,000 to finance the environmental impact statement. And I'm going to guess that over this biennium, about $1.5 million will end up getting spent on those kinds of things. Are they here? Is that budget here, or is that, I'm just curious.
Transportation Economic Development.
Senator, I just want to be sure that we're talking about the strategic reserve, and I take your question to mean pools of resources that were available for support of the governor's office. The governor obviously has influence over the strategic reserve fund, but it's not in support of our office. It is largely, as you I think know, it is in support of economic development activities. It tends to be used for support for, you know, what might otherwise be marginal economic development projects, finish somebody's sewer system up, do their EIS for Nucor, which is what we're in the process of doing, that kind of thing. But it's not what I would characterize in support of this administration office.
Sir, I was happy with Mr. Wise's first answer. The strategic reserve fund is an area that certainly anybody who's trying to get economic development
moving forward has been in play. I appreciate the additional information.
Thank you very much. Can I ask a couple of questions in that regard? The strategic reserve fund from the Oregon Economic Development Department, is that lottery or is that general fund?
Good question. I'm not sure I've got the answer to it. I think it's lottery, but it's practically fungible at this stage.
Yeah, let's take a look at that. Are there other reserve funds in any other agencies that are available? For instance, if Oregon Economic Development has a strategic reserve fund for the governor to accommodate businesses and industry, perhaps would Oregon Department of Transportation have a similar reserve fund that could assist at the governor's request to accommodate special transportation needs? Are there other reserves of that nature?
There are no other reserve or similar type funds that I'm aware of that require the governor's signature on a piece of paper. And I say that because one of the reasons I'm as familiar with the Strategic Reserve Fund as I am is that the governor actually signs a document which allocates the funds to a specific purpose. And so we get these things. They are generated by ADD. They come in. We look at them. If appropriate, phone around if it's not something we're already familiar with. I don't think that we have anything else quite like that. ODOT does have a special fund of many, I might add, that are intended for similar circumstances where a particular transportation improvement, and I'm talking about very modest improvements, by the way, might make a big difference in some economic development activity. And oftentimes, the Department of Economic Development works hand in glove with them in packaging all of these together so that at the end of the day, you've got a panoply of resources for a project or a company or whatever. It's not something that we direct, however. Every once in a while, we're asked to weigh in. You know, would you please call them and break your arm off on my behalf? Any of you have been at the other end of those phone calls, so
thank you very much. In that regard, and perhaps this would help me better understand it, because we are hearing that issues relative to the governor's livability initiatives and the community solutions team.
Mm-hmm.
And I have served as a member of one of those community solutions teams relative to the expansion of the Snake River Correctional Institution in Ontario. And I have spoken very much in favor of it, having participated. I know that there's not a great deal of support, particularly for additions of positions. Did perhaps the, I believe it was like $105,000 that was originally used to fund the first of the community solutions teams, and that was OEDD money, and they didn't, it wasn't any magical wand that was waved. It was a great idea. It brought, and I chastised Greg just a little bit, Greg Wolf, just a little bit this morning. He said, well, it brought state agencies together so that we were communicating. And then it brought state agencies together with the local agencies so they were communicating together. And the chair, Chair Hannon, Senator Hannon, then asked, well, you know, and did it seem to work? And yes, it seemed to work. And they all started communicating, well, what powers and authorities will be vested in them on some of those kinds of things. Well, I saw Mr. Wolf in the hall shortly after that, and I said, you're right on point, except that you forgot the third leg of the stool, and that was that it not only got state agencies discussing things back and forth so that decisions could be made and communicated then state agencies to local agencies, but probably the best portion of it was that, and Representative Hansen, having come from county government as well, can probably appreciate this, and that is it got local governments to communicate. barriers, which we have never, because the Vikings, I mean, they play the Tigers every year, and win, lose, or draw, there's always half of the valley that's mad at the other half of the valley. So there's no way that we can discuss those kinds of things. But the other thing that the Community Solutions team did, the Community Solutions team approach, did for our particular valley was that the Tigers and the Bulldogs and the Vikings all started talking to one another, and the actual local governments then began to come together and say, well, wait a minute, we're looking around the room and everybody's wearing white hats. We thought you guys wore the black hats and we wore the white hats, and we found out that there was lots of people that wore white hats, and there was, you know, and then we finally came to the solution and conclusion that the good guys shouldn't be fighting the good guys. And I think that was probably, and I would pass that back, because that's really what we learned out of the Community Solutions approach, was that you know, for a very little bit of money, and the $105,000 is a lot of money, that it was scattered over a couple of years' time to accommodate a facilitator within the community, and then that coordination took place, and we actually got some very, very, very good things done. In fact, when we look back at some of the suggestions which had been made in the 60s and 70s, those are now actually being completed, and it's only as a result of the fact that we were able to bring those things to the table, because we all then realized that those suggestions and solutions, which had been proposed 20 and 30 years before, had great import and efficacy back then. And they were still everything as important today, but they just weren't communicated.
How was that funded?
That's being funded by a special request, and we heard from Greg Wolf, a representative from the governor's office, requesting a portion of that coming from the transportation department. I think portions of it will come from several departments. The departments that were brought to the table, Senator, and this perhaps is mundane relative to the governor's office, but they are very important when you get any kind of a project. You get OEDD, which the Office of Economic Development, which is going to bring some financial partners to the table, and we've heard that they do have some resource. It brought the Department of Transportation to the table, and the Department of Transportation, this is one of the questions we asked last week in our public hearings with the Department of Transportation. We've been studying a project, and one of these projects had been suggested in 1969. We've been studying the project for seriously for 25 years. And the question is, if we had a company come to the table today and say, we want to move to your community, and that's a project that we want to go ahead and fund, and this happened to be the mayor of Wallace, and that we were asking this question of, how quickly could we move forward with that particular project? And he said, well, first of all, you know, back when we started studying it, it was a $2 million project. But today it's a $50 million project. We said, okay, but the answer is, how fast could you go ahead and proceed? If you had a company that wanted to locate into Wallaston today, and the answer was, it would probably take us about 5 years to study it. And so, you know, we come back full circle again, and I then reminded some of the folks that do the studies that in New Mexico and Arizona, well, New Mexico and Albuquerque, out in the middle of nowhere, and it's a land use plan probably issue in this state, but Levi Strauss came to the state and said, we would like, you've got near Albuquerque, the land, the location, the infrastructure is there, and part of the OEDD money is the infrastructure issue, but we need an off-ramp. And if we fund the off-ramp, a full four-directional off-ramp, you know, what do you think the time would be? And the governor in that state said, we want Levi Strauss. We want a $300 million factory and the jobs that come with it. Why don't we do this? Why don't we get started on the off-ramp and we'll actually make some side roads so that your cement trucks and so forth can pull up, and let's have a game. Let's see who can be first online, whether it's your factory or whether it's our off-ramp. And they had the off-ramp and the factory done together. And it didn't take them 5 years to study the issue. They just proceeded and did it. And I think this is part of the outgrowth of the community solutions process, is that everybody wants the same thing. Let's not get together and study it. Let's get together and do it. And I think that's probably part of the process.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Scott, excuse me for that diet.
No problem. I apologize. One of the biggest fans, so I'll take the crack to him. In regards to, let's say you and Senator, or the Governor and Senator Lim wanted to go to a trade mission to Korea, and you obviously have to take staff with you and so
right.
forth to some extent. How do you pay for that?
Well, it depends. Any one of three or four different ways. One is it may come out of our office budget. Two is if EDD has organized this, it might be out of their budget. That would be just for the governor. Occasionally, and I think actually when the governor went to Cheongbu and Korea, it was a Port of Portland trip, and so they probably paid. So it depends a little bit on the sponsorship and who's...
I had another follow-up question. The Oregon State Police and Dignitary Protective Unit, Dignitary Protection Unit, how many are assigned? Well, that's probably not...
I'll talk about that for a second.
Can you do that? I don't want to go and the public session issues that we try to be sensitive to the issues of the
sure.
firewall and
right.
security
right.
issues
right.
and kind of those things.
Right.
But that which
so
that would be public.
And this is no secret. I think it's information. I wouldn't say how many are at any one time necessarily with the governor, but there is within the Department of State Police the Dignitary Protection Unit, which is comprised, I'm going to say, of maybe 8 or 9 people with others who rotate in periodically depending on vacation schedules or other needs, other public needs. They have the responsibility to provide executive security to the governor and to the first lady when she is on state business, on public business, which is not infrequent, and also for other public functions. For example, my wife happens to be a judge. She just got back from the judicial conference in Eugene, and the Dignitary Protection Unit provides security whenever you get a lot of judges in one place. You never know what's going to happen. Evidence there. They provide essentially 24-hour security to the governor wherever and whenever and travel with him. Typically they drive as well, although always a source of friction between he and they.
They drive. He's not allowed to drive.
Well, he would prefer to drive.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, that's part of the challenge. The DPU is a part of the state police budget, not a part of the governor's office budget. When the governor is here, they are in evidence in our office. There is a place for them. And to know more about the budget realities, you're probably better off talking to the state police. But it's been in existence in one form or another, executive security, as long as I've known it, as a regular attendee at National Governors Association meetings. There are more state police officers than there are governors together. But that's essentially what they do. They provide him security, and in the course of that, travel with him, drive him, and otherwise attend to the security needs. And that's it, by the way. It's not, there's no other role there other than security. That's the rationale and the reason for it.
Thank you.
ask any other questions you might have.
Certainly, without and feel free to just do a timeout if there is any issue. Relative to that, I know that the governor does use aircraft to fly to the various places. Are the pilots state troopers as well?
The pilots of the state police aircraft are state police officers, sworn officers, and they are pilots as well. The state police prefer, as a matter of policy, whenever the governor is in a small plane, to have their own officers flying. And that hasn't been a particular problem, but it sometimes can be a bit of an issue. And these are people who I think spend most of their time actually on fish and game work. That's their primary responsibility. But when the governor flies with them, they're state police officers. They're not part of the dignitary protection unit. They're just regular state police officers.
And
the governor gets to fly the plane?
No, absolutely not. You know, we've been through this.
I'm a pilot. He should be able to fly the airplane. He may not log the time, but he ought to be able to sit in the seat. And
well, actually, now in the King Airs, they have two pilots, so there's Brady has an unfortunate history with flying governors, so in the back seat.
relative to the security issues that surround the governor, frequently when I travel back to Eastern Oregon, I'll fly to Boise, and it's not uncommon that I'll run into the airport to Cecil Andrews or Phil Bass, or the last time we were driving back from the airport to Ontario, we passed Idaho number one and looked in, and it was their 10th one. Do we have some special issues? If I could run their 10th one off of the highway driving his own vehicle, do we have special issues in Oregon that Idaho or perhaps other states don't have that are related to security that we? I just, and again, he's welcome to take time out anytime he'd like. I just was concerned about why we have such a heightened level of security in Oregon.
First, I'm not sure that we do have a heightened level of security. We were seeing the governor in the Portland airport. He had a hard time picking out state police officers. He just wanders along, and they're there. And if you know who they are, you spot them. But they're not easy. They don't. They're much different than, say, Secret Service in that respect. And so I'm not sure. I'm pretty familiar with the security arrangements in other states, and I think I wouldn't characterize them as that much different. There are many states who do quite a bit more than we do. The smaller states, Idaho and Montana, do a little less. Actually, I'm not so sure about Idaho, but Montana does do less. I can't think of anything that I would characterize as unique or different. I would say this. This is not a policy comment, but it is a matter, it's an issue having to do with the access to handguns, which has changed considerably, and I think that the state police and their DCU role are always worried about concealed weapons with respect to their responsibilities as executive or dignitary protection, because you just don't know who's where and who they're packing, and that will vary from one state to the next. Some states have policies here and there, and other states don't. But I can't think of any particularly unique.
Okay. Do we have any feel for the costs that are being borne by the OSP for the dignitary protection unit and the OSP and the other kinds of overhead that are related to transportation of the government transportation?
You know, I would, if you accomplish this, but I would be a little more comfortable having you talk with the budget folks from OSP to do that, to run you through, because it's complicated. These people are, most of them are on the SWAT team. They cycle in and out of other duties and responsibilities, and so they've been very efficient about just having people there when they're needed. And I just couldn't tell you what the how the budget on that works.
I certainly don't want to come anywhere near any kind of breach of the issues, particularly on the public record, but the issues of the number of the number of security that are involved, and I guess other of our colleagues in the building have questioned the issues of security here within the building from the aspect of the fact that at most any time of the day or night, pretty good sized trucks can pull into the basement, much smaller than the McMurrin Oklahoma City truck.
Right under my office.
Two stories up, exactly, from your office. And that's been a concern.
That's a very legitimate issue.
We've talked about other, with the Department of Administrative Services, we've got millions of dollars worth of equipment up on the fourth and fifth floor. We've talked about other issues of security in the mall, and quite honestly, and I appreciate the fact that the capital is the people. Access the government and sunshine disinfection. We ought to have all the sunshine we ought to have that we can possibly get on the process. But this building is probably the most accessible of all state buildings. And quite honestly, the courthouse in Niagara County has a little bit better security than the state capitol has. And I have been approached again by others of our colleagues and asked, is this an issue that we should be concerned about? If the governor is concerned about it or not concerned about it, the Dignitary Protection Units are obviously cognizant of what comes and goes. But I do have rather
disgusting. Yep. Well, he works in the building too, so if somebody pulls in a fertilizer truck, he's going to go with the rest of us. But I think it's a legitimate area of inquiry. And over the years that I've been involved, and I was nevertheless there when we voted to construct these wings, and security was not an issue that anyone paid attention to at the time, and it's pretty apparent, frankly, if you walk around. And Gary's old shop at the Multnomah County Courthouse is now very difficult to get into without having to go run the gauntlet. And it's a bit of a pain, but it's very appropriate. And I think periodically it's worth revisiting in this building because life has gotten more complicated.
With the rather substantial Dignitary Protection Units and the cadre of officers that surround the governor, I would think at some particular point, the issue of the long-term protection for the overall facility and the members, particularly the elected members, but all of those who come and go here, would be something that would be appropriate to discuss. And perhaps if we don't discuss at this particular level, then maybe it's something that we would talk about through the capital planning. And right now we've got we're pending on the capital planning budget, capital planning commission budget, pending a brief footnote talking about before they move from the task force stage to the actual licensing and authorization and buying the building from that stage, just a brief opportunity to allow the elected officials to know exactly what they're going to do. And perhaps one of the things that we'll be discussing at that point will be security. And I would like to see, if not in this particular budget, because the Dignitary Protection Unit is for all of the dignitaries in the building, but the governor has the most obvious cadre of officers.
that perhaps that's something that we would want to just ask amongst the group of officers there, that in the interim some discussion be held relative to the security and the McMurrin building is absolutely the there almost is not a single time that I pull into the basement that does not come to mind. And then when at various times of the day when I see fairly substantially large trucks, not semis, but large trucks pulled into the basement, obviously on good business, but could have been easily hijacked and filled with fertilizer. It just is a concern. I don't know if that's something you need to address.
Mr. Chair, though, you do know that the Capitol building itself is under the aegis of the legislative administration building. It's the only building, or the legislative administrative committee, it's the only building in the state, I think, that is actually managed and owned by the legislature. And there is a state police kind of a substation down, if you were to come to the coffee shop. So there is a fairly healthy contingent of state police officers on the site during the session and retired state police officers,
yes,
who you see in your wanderings around. And they stay in pretty close touch about what's happening, what kind of, what kind of groups are planning on coming to the Capitol today, what have they picked up. There's a pretty good network of activity, but your point is a very legitimate one. The building itself is accessible to anybody who wants it, really, and I think it's a subject worth rethinking periodically in light of all that we know.
So perhaps when we get into the legislative budget, that would be the more appropriate place for that. It has been a concern, and Representative Nesterly, who couldn't be with us for this particular portion, has asked specifically about that. And again, Representative Hansen, having been in the county government, recognizes that where a circuit court judge is involved, they make darn good and sure that the building is much more secure than where the governor parks his operations. So,
Mr. Chair, the other problem is that detecting fertilizer in this building is sometimes a peculiar problem.
That's the last minute.
Okay, the federal funds that showed up in the budget in 1995-97, I'm sorry, I don't think that's $155,000. Maybe George could help us with that particular issue.
Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to answer that specific question, but would you like me to finish off the governor's presentation on the governor's office budget? I'd like to get the numbers in as part of the record.
That's fine. That would be fine.
That's why I brought it along. Let me, for the record, my name is George Dunford. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. I appreciate you folks being here today. I don't think I've ever been part of a discussion at quite this high a level, so it's interesting to me. Thank you. Very briefly, Mr. Wyatt has gone over some of the numbers, but let me just put those into perspective quickly. The original governor's recommended December budget for the office of the governor had $5,574,516 general fund. Other funds limitation was $779,803 for a total funds budget of $6,354,319. 29 positions and 29 FTE.
You're a good man, George.
I try to be. I promise the chair I'd put at least a dollar in today.
American campus is saying we appreciate the food, George.
The original budget that the governor proposed for the office of the governor is a 3.4% total funds increase over the 1997-99 legislatively approved budget level. maintains all the current functions, with the exception that it does transfer the telecommunications policy office to the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division. The budget was crafted, as all budgets are crafted, for the governor's recommended phase, by starting out with a legislatively adopted budget for 97-99. In this particular instance, we added the January 1998 e-board, which was the distribution of the compensation package to state agencies. And to that, we make further adjustments through what we call our position inventory control system, or PIC.
Now, you okay?
Yeah, I'm in for a buck. So
all right, okay.
Get some of the wood. That basically makes up the base. And then at that point, we make further adjustments through our essential package process, make inflation adjustments, price list adjustments, and that gets us to our current service level. Mr. West went over the three packages, so I won't go into that. There are three small policy packages, two actually small policy packages, and one larger transfer in the budget. And that brings us to the governor's revised recommended budget, which is the actual number, or the number that we're here today talking about. In March of 99, the governor revised the recommended budget by reducing the general fund by $222,981. The revised recommended budget is, therefore, $5,351,535 general fund. Other funds limitations stayed the same at $779,803. Total funds changed to $6,131,338. And as Mr. White earlier pointed out, that is about a quarter of a percent decrease over the 1997-99 LAB, legislatively approved budget.
And I know you've probably already explained this, but could you explain it again for me? Why are we transferring the telecommunication policy, making the group to GAS?
Well, there's a practical reason, and then a kind of an underlying philosophical reason on our part. And the practical reason, Senator Cho, is that the individual who had been hired to fill that role after a couple of years took another job outside of Oregon. And we analyzed the position and dysfunction and concluded that it would be more appropriate to connect with the Information Resource Management Division of DAS, which is ostensibly also under the control direction of the governor, because, and this is a bias of mine, I have tried in managing our office and our community to have as few possible sort of day-to-day management functions within our office. It's a policy office, and that's what it ought to be.
How long has it been?
Oh, it was put there in 95, and it was there as a result of the passage. I can't remember the bill number, but it was the Telecommunications Forum Council, and this individual was actually provided staff assistance to the council, but was the telecommunications advisor to the governor. That was how it was intended, funded through this social assessment. Mm-hmm. She left, and we then officially made Don Mezziotti, who is the state information officer, he's filling the role. He's not being paid twice, but he's filling the role as the governor's telecommunications policy advisor. And actually, we've been very satisfied with that.
He's not been office with you anyway, has he?
Oh, no. He's over in Dallas, and he has a large job. He's the information management officer for the state, so he has all the big IT projects, telecommunications, et cetera.
So you think it'll work okay? And
yep, I do. I do.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, if Don's doing the job, and Mr. Butler and I have met with them, I have had the tour of the facility. It's quite impressive.
It's amazing. It really is.
If Don's doing the job, why not just eliminate the positions entirely as opposed to transferring them?
Well, may have to help with the process. There is another individual who actually went from our office to his and staffs this function. It's filled by a person who continues to play the same role. With respect to the advisor position, I'm not sure that we would actually object to that. I don't know that this is the moment to do it, because I think that'd be fine with us, actually.
Great. Any other comments, questions?
Just one more quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've set aside $40 million for the bargaining that the governor's office is conducting with 27 bargaining units. Isn't that correct?
31
bargaining
units. There you go. I hear from most of them.
Sure you do, and I do not envy you, frankly. In the governor's, in your own office budget here, if the governor settles for more than that,
mm-hmm.
obviously the tradition that's occurred and what we're expecting is that those agencies, including your own office, will have to absorb it. You going to have the money to absorb that, though?
Well,
I know it depends on what they're settling for.
Right. And, of course, our employees are not represented. They're exempt.
Well, they're not.
Correct.
I'm sorry. Exempt. I didn't understand that.
Like legislative employees.
Yes.
Assuming that a similar raise is accorded to exempt employees, which has kind of been that tradition, like everybody else, it's going to be a scramble, and it's going to be very difficult. We're moving into, in our office, into the second of the two four-year terms. We've had very little turnover. In fact, we've had virtually no turnover in our office. As you move closer to the end of that four-year period, there will be some turnover. That's my assumption. And I'm not pushing anybody out the door. In fact, I'm doing everything I can to keep a rope on them. But that will assist us to some extent in helping to address that. But it's going to be tough. I don't want to underscore that or underplay this. It's going to be tough.
Bill, and maybe you've covered this and apologize if you have, but, and I should know, but I don't understand the way the Natural Resource Office is budgeted.
Okay.
I know that you've got Paula and her assistant, and is Roy under that now, Roy Hemingway, but then I know there's a whole bunch of people that come from all over the place, and I never understood why we don't have a Natural Resource Office. We're paying for it. It's just that they're not. You can't find them in the budget for them. So.
Well, actually, it is part of the DAS budget. The Governor's Office of Natural Resources is part of the DAS budget. The Governor has in his office a Natural Resource Policy Advisor, and that's Paula Furgis. Also, let's see.
Is she paid in Governor's budget?
Yes.
Chargers.
I believe that the governor's, well, I'm not sure, we may have changed this last time. I'm not seeing it right now. Greg Wolf, who is the governor's drug policy, drug management policy advisor, is part of our budget. The governor's salmon advisor used to be part of our budget, and I don't see it here right now, Representative Messerly, so it's possible that that is now part of the, let's take a look here. No.
Well, I'm glad to know I'm not the only one confused.
Well, as I was saying earlier, you know, there are 47,000 people working state government, and one time or another, an awful lot of them race through the office. I believe that Roy's position is now identified with the Governor's Office of Natural Resource Policy, which is associated with that. It's in the past budget. Which actually, I guess, didn't, that part of the DAS budget didn't come to this committee.
It is part of it that went to the Natural Resource. So
right, that would be good.
And part of it went to the DAS. And my confusion, and that's where I wanted to go with, is that I understand that part of it's with DAS, and the supervisory capacity, I guess, is in the governor's budget. But then there are some that are in Department of Ag, there's some that are in the Water Resources Department, one or two, I think there's one or two that's in forestry. And I understand how for certain situations the governor would borrow people. But these are staff members that have been there for some time, and I guess I'd could you just respond with the justification for not having through DAS or somebody where all of the permanent staff is, and so that someone that wanted to know who was working right. The cost within the governor's office to see all of them.
Well, I guess I would respond thusly. When people say, how many people work for the in the governor's office, I say, well, it will be, presumably, when this is done, 29, it used to be 31. There are offices that are associated with our office, and I would call it a dotted line connection. The office of the governor's office of natural resource policy, the office of education and workforce policy, and potentially the Great Wolf's community development function, that all have dotted line connections to the office of the governor. And I suppose there are a million ways to construct all of this. This is the way that we've chosen to go about it because we prefer the flexibility of it to begin with. I don't see, and, you know, I just talked to my counterpart in California. They're 10 times larger than we are. The governor's office has 300 people in it. And I, as a general rule, would prefer not to have one large organization which becomes a lot less flexible, a lot less easy to manage, and a lot less able to move fleetly as issues develop. And so that's the reason we've chosen to go this direction. I don't think you'll find anyone in any of these roles who is doing something for which they are being improperly paid, for example. They're all fulfilling functions. We've chosen to organize them in groups so that they're able to accomplish those functions, we think, more efficiently. And the chair went on at some length about the Community Development Office and the Community Solutions Team, which we're obviously big proponents of. That is a, I would say, is a general strategy reflects our approach to problem solving, whatever the problem is. I get the right people in the room. I don't want to go on too long about this, but I'll give you an example, a case in point. The new governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, called shortly after his election, and he had putting together groups of people to sort of organize his administration, and he, one of the things he wanted to do was he discovered that there were 26 different divisions, organizations, agencies in state government who had something to do with drug and alcohol abuse and response. And he wanted to reconstruct everything and put them all in one place and just collapse it all. And wanted our advice on that kind of organizational change. And I said, well, there are two ways to go about it. One is you can go in and change the organizational structures and remove these programs, which is what he wanted to do, and put them in one place. If you're governor for 24 years, you may be able to accomplish that. But the better approach is to take a person maybe from each of those places, put them around the table and say, here's what I want accomplished, and I want you to go back and figure out how to get it done. And that is essentially our approach, as opposed to the other. There are advocates for the large structures. I'm not one of them. And so I don't know how else to say it. I think that we have chosen to take like functions that are focused on priorities of the governor and bring them together under one roof for that purpose. And sometimes they go away, too, and they have in the case of the governor's office of natural resource policy. They have people come in, accomplish something, and leave again. But I think you'll find them all, with exception of the two individuals now in the governor's office of natural resource policy. Paula is the governor's personal policy advisor.
And I don't want you to take my comments wrong. I fully support. The government needs support. I guess it's just difficult for me to see the schematic of how all these people, where they come together from. I guess, could you provide, is it possible you could provide some kind of a schematic, not only for natural resources, but the other department, whether the department heads or the department heads. I think that's important that we have that kind of strength, as you say, and can draw together that kind of expertise if we're trying to resolve problems.
Mr. Chair.
Along that same line, is that we have, the state has a natural resource office back in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's, they pay part of the bill, but also the Department of Human Resources also buys a piece of that as well.
They do.
For their own purposes. Yeah.
Do those people serve or are directly under the purview and the guidance of the governor's office, or
they
are they through the natural resources office, or another?
They are employed by the Office of Natural Resources Policy. The other is employed by the Department of Human Resources. They've essentially paid for her position, and they have approved her hiring. So you got one person, basically, this being Kevin Smith, who spends almost all of his time on natural resource-related issues. And Tracy Straub, no relation. So I met her the first time she came to Oregon, and she was stunned to discover we had a governor by the same name. Who spends most of her time, if not all of it, on human resource issues. So all of the myriad waivers, Medicaid issues, there's just a gazillion things that come up. She tends to those. Kevin deals with the equally myriad number of natural resource issues with our delegation and with federal agencies now.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, the natural resource, there's an Office of Natural Resource Policy that is separate and apart than your from the governor's natural resources office.
When you all had the DAS budgets here, if you had the whole thing, because I guess this piece was stripped out, you would have seen something called the governor's office of natural resource policy, and it would have branched off from one of the divisions within DAS, and you'd be able to see the positions, what they do, where they are. The head of the governor's office of natural resource policy is the governor's personal assistant for natural resource policy, that being Paula Burgess. Now, it's a little tricky because when you ask me questions like this, I don't always sit down, I don't see all the boxes and the lines. I know the people and I know what they do. And that's really the important part as far as I'm, for my purposes here. It's a very good question, and we'll get you the organization charts. From a functional point of view, Paula Burgess is the governor's, is the director, if you want to call it that, of the governor's Office of Natural Resource Policy. More importantly, she's the leader of the panel there. And these folks report to and through her and work under her guidance and administration. Jean Thorne is the director of the governor's office of workforce and education policy. And this was created by the last session after I think we came to the conclusion with the leadership that half of the state budget goes towards education and not a single person who reports directly to the governor has anything to do with it. And so we created this small function. And then there is potentially this session, the Community Development Office, which is houses the Community Solutions Team and so forth, and Greg Wolk, the leader of, he is in the governor's office budget as well.
Bill, the position you talked about, the natural resource position in Washington, D.C., didn't that used to be funded by the Economic Development?
It was at one time.
And wasn't it just this year that we're switching that over to...
Yeah, I think that's correct, yeah. And Kevin,
and that's how you... yes, I did. It is
general fund. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Kevin Smith, who is the individual involved, used to work for the department and did a lot of work in Washington and either drew the long or the short straw and volunteered to...
I know what follows, the load she carried during this past interim. What's your sense of the workload in some of these fields? I'm thinking of all the listings, and I'm sure in some of the other departments, maybe you see the same thing, such as healthcare, as there's just so many issues that to expect one person to be able to negotiate with NEMS and keep track of where they're going is
well,
impossible task.
I'm going to spend as much time in her office probably as I do. I mean, if you get a sense of the load that she packs. And we've got other folks like that as well, Mark Gibson, who's got all of the healthcare stuff and has to negotiate endlessly and constantly with our federal friends and partners and others. It's a substantial workload. It's very difficult. I say this, these are all full-time jobs, and then the legislature comes to town. and it just adds that much more. I mean, when
I thought you meant they got some help from the
I'm sure that's how they do it. These are big jobs. People take them voluntarily and enthusiastically, and so while I'm always concerned about the state of their mental health, I'm also aware of the fact that and I think any one of them would tell you it's an honor to be where we are. We enjoy our work very much. Some days are better than others, but it is a big workload. But she would be there if she didn't want to be.
Thank you. We just got a schematic here, but I don't know that it points out where they all come from. Oh, that's okay. Why don't you do it?
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
above Kevin Smith's name, I see policy packages. Is there a policy package for the Washington, D.C. office?
There is in the GNRO budget, which is, I believe, in Senator Ferraioli's subcommittee, if that's not correct. Yeah.
Did you have any comments after you looked at this?
I'm not sure what else I would say other than you can see from the panoply of organizations and agencies that it is a very diverse group. I'd be willing to bet you that no one of them probably knows where the other comes from, you know, where their paycheck arrives from, and to me that's the one of the strengths of the organization. That's not what they're paying attention to. They're paying attention to what their mission at hand is. And if I take it, Mr. Chair, that you would prefer that we be more directed here about identifying where all this has come from, and we'll try and do a better job at that. At the same time, I do think that what we're trying to do here is find the right people in the right roles to focus on specific topics, and I think we've been able to do that pretty effectively.
And I guess what this points out, for instance, one comes from forestry, one comes from the ag budget, and one, two come from ODF&W, and that's what I've trying to get a focus on.
Right.
Thank you very much. Is there any other questions or comments? If not, we might go back to our office and go to work. we'll cancel the meeting. Right? Yeah, that's a good idea.